This is Hidden Mysteries Radio, discussing the topics no one else dares to.
Police, from the past few weeks, were receiving some error and warning reports to our remote server that shows that your computer is auto-downloading some junk and malicious files from the internet source, and those files are corrupting the internal software and the security part of the computer. Are you aware of that?
Everybody, welcome back. It's Hidden Mysteries Radio. This is your friendly neighborhood Asmodor, and we've got my co-host Ghost. Say hello, Ghost.
Yeah, good evening.
Ghost, earlier today you got a phone call. Tell us about that.
Well, I got a phone call that said they're going to help me out, that I had problems with my computer that was downloading stuff, and it was making the whole internet insecure, according to them. I was just a dangerous computer running over here.
And it just sounded like a maybe somebody local, a Texan?
Yeah, if you consider all the way from India, Texan. Nah, this sounded like a Pakistani or an Indian.
I see. And so he said he was going to help you with your problem. How did he propose to do that?
Well, he proposed that I needed to get him my access into my computer so he'd get in there and fix the problem, because he had been hired to take care of all the Windows units in the United States.
Yeah. Well, that's a hell of a job, isn't it?
I would think that he could one person could barely handle my neighborhood, much less the entire country.
Right. Well, so you did grant him access to your computer, didn't you?
Oh, you know I did.
And so did he fix it?
Well, he backed out after he got a taste of a few choice Texas curse words.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, I had an experience like that not long ago. I was just comfortably asleep in my bed, right at 8 o'clock in the morning, the phone started to ring. And the strange thing about it was, it almost sounded like sitar music. And when I picked up the phone, I could smell curry and armpit odor coming real hard out of the receiver. So I thought, well, what is this? And then this is what I heard.
Okay, now start over, please. It's about the computer.
Yes, it's a routine checkup call from the IT services. The purpose of the call is, from the past few weeks, we are receiving some error and warning reports to our remote server that shows that your computer is auto-downloading some junk and malicious files from the internet source, and those files are corrupting the internal software and the security part of the computer. Are you aware of that?
No, I wasn't aware of that. What company are you calling from?
The name of our company is IT Services. We are the company that taking care of the security concern of all brands of Windows-based computers, sir. If anything goes wrong in the computer, we are the company that taking care of that. So just let me know, except you, any of your family member are use their computer.
Could you give me a phone number where I could call you back?
Okay, just write down the phone number then.
Uh-huh.
It's 480.
Uh-huh.
529.
Uh-huh.
4303. All right?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, Ghost, let's try to make heads or tails of what we just heard. This was Sam from the IT services. What do you think the odds were that Sam really was from the IT services?
About the same amount of odds as we've already got people on Mars living there.
Yeah. Well, you know, the phone scams have been going on for a long time. And, you know, not just phone scams, but aggressive telemarketing and that sort of thing. And we, here in this studio, we have a little bit of experience on that, so we can go into that a little more. But this thing that's going on with these guys from India is really getting rampant, isn't it?
Well, it's nothing but cyber terrorism. It's worse than it's ever been. It really is a terroristic act against the common folks. Of course, it's not a threat to the government, so they'll never declare war on India over that one. But it has gotten ridiculous to how many leeches there are out there. These are nothing but the old-fashioned confidence men. They try to gain your trust by telling you how much they're going to help you. And the only thing they want to help is that money in your wallet right out of your bank account, because they're wanting to get in your computer to get to your passwords and get to your bank.
Well, sure. Well, and you know, it's not just that they call around about things like that all the time. But yeah, that's exactly what that guy was getting at. And the worst thing about that is that the target of this is obviously elderly people, because your average middle age or younger person knows way better than to think that somebody who's been contracted by Windows is going to call them up and say, "Hey, just give me access to your computer." I mean, they're basically going hit and miss, like the Nigerian guys who say, you know, "I've got $600 million. I'm the prince of Nambudiri, and I just need $10,000 to get the money out, and I'll split it with you." It's basically the same thing, isn't it? They work their whole lives, and perhaps as they get older, and just preying on them.
Well, you got to remember, the United States, especially the older generations, we're a much more trusting bunch than we are now. But the people over in India and the places, well, it's not just India, but India's been the worst in our neighborhood lately. They're leeches. They're feeding off these elderly people that are innocent as of nothing other than being nice people. Because we know of one lady who, her husband passed away about 2 years ago. He left her over $1 million, well secure. And a confidence man out of China talked her out of every cent of it. She's pitiless. And it's just unheard of what's going on. And it's one reason why I decided we really ought to try this for a part of our show today, was to warn people about this kind of nonsense. My own parents got a phone call here about three months ago that acted like he was their grandson, even though they didn't give a name. Said, "Your grandson, this is your grandson." And of course, my mother would say, "Robert, is that you?" "Yes, this is Robert." And I said, "Well, I'm in a Mexican jail and blah, blah, blah. I got to send me several hundred dollars or $1,500 through some fake prepaid credit card setup." And they were going down to the store to do it. We were just lucky that the manager of the store had already seen this crime. That's what it is, a crime, happened before to his customers, and he wouldn't sell them the money order. He wouldn't sell them anything. He said, "I would never sell you something like that until you check with your bank." And luckily they were saved that money, because they were ready to send it down there to get my son out of jail. It's just, whenever they called me earlier that I did, I gave them some Texas choice words. I don't have any ill feeling about giving them curse words, all I can. In fact, I think everybody that gets a call like that should set aside their Christian concepts and give them a few choice curse words, because these are criminals. These are people that actually come to your door, would be the same thing as them come to your door, open your door up, walk into your house and steal something. And that's what they're trying to do.
Sure. And you nailed it. They're confidence men. They prey on the trust of whoever they're calling. Now, you know, the telemarketing as a domestic industry got to be such a problem in the 90s and early 2000s that every state passed, and the federal government as well, passed lots of laws to regulate it. They regulated like these auto dialers that you'll get a call saying, "Please hold on, we have an important business call for you." Well, you know, that if the auto dialer is set to dial too fast for the number of employees talking on the phone, you'll get these calls all day, and while you're holding, if you hold for them, they'll hang up on you. And so they passed laws of how fast they can set those. They passed laws of what hours they can call, and what days. They passed laws that you can put yourself on a do not call list, and that these places have to maintain a do not call list. And that really put the bite on the domestic telemarketing scams. And so now what we have is we have all these foreign telemarketing scams, because now they have the advantage of being able to use IP phones and smartphones, but I'm sure it's mostly IP phones coming out of India and elsewhere, where they just have a little simple program they use to mask the caller ID. When I recorded that audio clip, it was because, you know, I woke up and I saw what it was, and we'd been getting some various calls like this, and I had a camera sitting right there. I thought, well, I'll record this. And when I saw what it was that they were proposing that I do, of course, I contacted the local paper, and they put an article out warning, you know, people don't fall for this. But that's how they get by with it. And the phone number, it was a dummy number that would do nothing but ring and ring, and it claimed to be Phoenix, Arizona, I think is what it was. And, you know, right here where we are in Lake Palestine, I got a call like that, a similar call like that. And when I got off the call, it was a local exchange number here in Frankston. I called it, and it claimed to be this hat factory that is one of the larger businesses in town. They knew nothing about it, of course. So our officials really aren't protecting us on this if it comes from outside the country. What solutions do you think might be for that?
Well, I would think this would be the biggest warning flag about these illegal immigrants coming over here, because this is what's coming. They're coming from all the telemarketing scams over there to bring that telemarketing scam online on shore. That's what I would fear.
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's just speaking of that particular group of immigrants, it's a lot worse problem than a lot of people think it is. You know, like, for instance, here's an article on VDare. California, hundreds of American IT workers are replaced by foreigners using H-1B visas. It says, the president likes to talk up the American middle class and how he's working to protect it. Meanwhile, in the real world, the middle class is shrinking because of Washington policies like mass immigration, outsourcing, and excess regulation. Obama has courted the billionaires of Silicon Valley to be supporters, and the tech bosses like open borders for IT workers so they can make even more money. A major tool is the H-1B visa for foreign tech employees, who are supposed to be used only when a citizen cannot be found to do the job. On Friday, Fox News journalist William Lajeunesse reported on the current state of H-1B visas with a timely example. Southern California Edison has brought in hundreds of Indians to replace citizen employees. Lajeunesse, the president talks a lot about protecting the middle class, yet 400 American workers here in Los Angeles are losing good middle class jobs to foreign workers on visas approved by the administration. Laid off workers at SCE, Southern California's largest utility, are furious because they must also train replacements from India. The Immigration and Nationality Act requires the hiring of a foreign worker not adversely affect the wages and working conditions of U.S. workers comparably employed, but experts say the law is routinely ignored. SCE will save about $40,000 per worker, about $16 million a year, by replacing American workers with foreigners on an H-1B visa, and this doesn't even calculate the savings that they're going to get by not having to pay all of their native workers their retirement that they had promised them. So, you know, what we're looking at here is really, it's a lot bigger issue than what you might have thought when you logged on to hear about Sam from the IT services, wouldn't you say, Ghost?
Yes, and what one thing you struck a thought whenever you said it was that they're passing these laws to allow this kind of immigration in to replace with American worker. Even the law says they can't replace that American worker. There is no structure. They knew there was no structure when they passed that law. There is no way to enforce it. And they knew that when they passed that law.
Well, and
they had no intention of passing a law to enforce it.
But, you know, the worst thing about this is you've got every major corporation from Silicon Valley, you know, everybody from Bill Gates to Zuckerberg, they're constantly at Capitol Hill spreading the bucks around through the political action committees wanting open borders on H-1B visas, more H-1B visas, more H-1B visas, because they claim they can't find IT and tech workers. Well, the facts show that that's absolutely wrong. There are literally millions of young, unemployed IT workers who are native-born Americans, who are American citizens, who can't find a job, and it's so bad now that while we're importing all these H-1B workers to satisfy the Zuckerbergs and the Gateses and so forth.
Well, you know,
a young man in my family,
of deregulation that has happened to this country.
Yeah.
Now, nobody ever gives it a second thought that not one of our senators, not one of our House representatives have ever come up with a bill and said, let's deregulate the unions. They're an overregulated industry, too.
Right.
Give them back the power and the tooth and the nail to stop some of this on their own.
Unfortunately, the major unions are all right in there with the push for the big Obama amnesty and everything.
Well, I know they are, but they also don't have any. They're operating within the only structure they have left to operate up because of overregulation.
Yeah, well, now, the other point that I was wanting to make is while we've got all these tech employees, STEM employees is what it's called, science, technology, electronics, engineering and mathematics, I believe is what that means. And we've got all these STEM employees who are natives and citizens who can't find jobs because while we're just bringing millions of men here and young people who are going to school now.
The market does not support engineering degrees.
Well, young people who are going to school now,
they cannot get those jobs. We don't support those degrees.
Well, young people who are going to school now to get those degrees are dropping out. There's a young man
going to the McDonald's flip burger schools.
Well, there's a young man in my family who is.
I'm making fun of it, but this is serious.
Yeah. Well, there's a young man in my family who was getting his degree in IT, and he got a dead end, but full-time job, and based on everything that's going on, he decided there was no point in pursuing it, and he's dropped out of college and just doing his 40-hour week, basically minimum wage job. And that's what we've got going on when we go to importing these people because they can get a cheaper tech worker. Then what we lose our native base in that industry. We don't have anybody. You know, the really sharp kids are going to go to whatever fields are available, and there's only so much space in law enforcement and prison and government. I mean, we've got to, especially when it comes to things like these electric utilities. There's nothing about this that you can outsource. You know, this is a public utility that's anchored to the place that it serves, and they're firing American employees who have been doing the job and doing the job well for decades to replace them with foreign workers to save a little money. And it's not just this administration. The last administration wasn't opposed to this kind of stuff either.
We saw that after the Katrina when they brought in all the foreign workers, left our people homeless on welfare.
Well, and it's, if people just understood the numbers, I know somebody who lives in that part of the country and you know, told me that the neighborhood they lived in, you know, it was all Americans that lived there 10 years ago, and now this person and I think one neighbor are the only ones left, and the rest of them are all Indians driving their Corollas up and down the street all day, was the way it was told to me. You know, it's just a complete demographic shift in a community, you know, and we're having them all over it here in.
We can no longer afford to be the refugee haven of the world when we can't even keep our own people employed and in decent housing.
No, and there's been a rider attached to the Homeland Security bill. It may have already been struck down for all I know, but it was to make sure and define the 14th Amendment so that every Supreme Court there is can't use it as the magical catch-all amendment to define it to say that the 14th Amendment specifically meant that the freed slaves in the United States had the right to vote and nothing else, and the right to citizenship. And, you know, that's the real draw here. You know, it's not just the pregnant Mexican woman running across the river in time to have her baby. We have what they call birth tourism going crazy. In California, they've got Chinese women. They have travel agencies that get it all set up, get the hospital set up and everything. They come over here and they have a dual citizen Chinese American child. And in the East, it's people from Eastern European countries and stuff like that doing the same stuff. And we reached mass saturation on this a long time ago, don't you think? Back when the back in the 90s when Barbara Jordan's immigration panel said that the America's immigration policy had to be restructured so that it was in the benefit of Americans and not immigrants.
Well, she saw it from a different angle because of her background, but she was absolutely right. I mean, she saw it as the complete denigration of the chance for the black youth of America to get decent jobs. And she was right. There's no jobs for them. But she didn't. I don't think she dreamed it would be so bad that our white kids couldn't get them either. It is going totally berserk to where you must be a foreigner to get a job in this country anymore.
Oh, if you want a job in construction, go on the Craigslist ads or in your local Thrifty Nickel, your paper, whatever, wherever the ads are, and you tell me how many of them don't require you to speak Spanish. You know, it's not very many. Well,
at that, speak to your bosses.
Yeah, and we're bumping up on our first break of the show. We'll be right back with something new and interesting after this, after these messages.
Truth seekers and freedom-loving Texans, HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
Just keeping it Texas on RFT. Just keeping it Texas the way it ought to be. As Texas as chili and barbecue. Keeping it real for me and you. Just keeping it Texas on RFT. Texas, where you wanna be. RadioFreeTexas.org, bringing Texas to the world.
All right, we're going to shift gears a little bit now, and we're going to talk about the push to legalize marijuana in Texas this session. There are several bills up. Some of them good, some of them bad. Here's the latest, most interesting one from a nearby state legislature. The headline says, Simpson, Christians would regulate pot like tomatoes, jalapenos. Not only should Texas legalize pot, says a state legislature from East Texas, it should forego any special tax and regulate regimen and simply allow pot to be sold and taxed like any other agricultural commodity. Now, this is from gritsforbreakfast.com. Longview State Rep. David Simpson has filed HB 2165, which would eliminate all state-level legal prohibitions against marijuana, leaving the plant regulated in Texas similar to, quote, tomatoes, jalapenos, and coffee, reported KETK-TV. Simpson authored a column yesterday announcing the bill on Trib Talk titled The Christian Case for Marijuana Reform. That remarkable item included, should we be concerned for our friends and neighbors who abuse a substance or activity? Yes, we should help them through sincere and voluntary engagement, but not with force and violence. Is there a place for prohibition? Yes, a prohibition of aggression in Romans 13. Our laws should prohibit and penalize violent acts. This is the jurisdiction of the magistrates under the new covenant. Harm to one's neighbor. Civil government should value everything God made and leave people alone unless they meddle with their neighbor. This ain't your daddy's Republican Party, folks. The comments reacting to coverage of the bill from Breitbart News demonstrate some of the ideological fault lines within the party over libertarian causes like this one. Well, Ghost, what do you think about what you heard there?
I'm all for the removal of all prohibitions on any agricultural product within our borders of Texas. I want the prohibition to remain in the other 50.
Well, and as a lot of people
worth a lot more.
As a lot of people have long said, you know, if there's no victim, there's no crime. And the reason that you hear why we need to keep drugs illegal and so forth is that, you know, oh, people take drugs or they drink and drive, or people take drugs and they beat their kids, or people take drugs and they steal. Well, haven't we always had laws against being irresponsible and killing somebody with your vehicle, or laws against stealing, laws against killing, that sort of thing?
Have the number of all those crimes risen since they decided to make prohibition on marijuana?
Well, yeah, pretty much. The crime statistics on just about everything.
People still beat their wives, and they're not even on drugs now.
Well, you know, one of the most interesting statistics about that is I believe a cop is something like 16 times more likely to beat his wife and children than an average citizen.
Yeah, but he's only got two-thirds the IQ of the average citizen.
Right, but and they're also far more likely to be alcohol and drug abusers. So, I mean, the people who are enforcing the law are often some of the biggest violators of the law, and that's a problem, wouldn't you say?
That's a problem in every society, that no one wants to address the problem. They want to turn their back, you know, and forget and refuse to admit it exists.
Well, I agree, and there's nobody watching the watcher either, really, is there?
Not any longer. Not since the justice. Well, you know, I know Texas more than the rest of it, but not since the justice system has sold us down the river.
Yeah. When did they do that, do you think?
That started in 1876 under Reconstruction.
Yeah. Well, now, one thing that I wanted to point out about this article is that I don't know much about this guy Simpson, but if he has written other legislation on other topics that is as concise and well put together and well informed as this, he'd really be a legislator to watch, because one of the big problems where they've legalized it already, California is a perfect example, is that one of the inducements to legalizing was that they would tax it heavily and it would bring all this income into the state's coffers. Well, Colorado has taxed the marijuana so heavily that, you know, certain strains of it can cost from $1,200 to $1,800 an ounce, I've read, and people can go on the streets and buy it in the black market for anywhere from around $100 to a few hundred dollars. And so, you know, that's a problem. You don't want that. And at the same time, when you do that, when you're sending people back out to the street, what you're doing is you have not even gotten rid of the worst part, the worst side effect of drug prohibition that needs to be done away with instantly, and that is the black market and the gang culture that has risen because of the drug prohibition.
There's a lot more benefit from particularly marijuana and hemp that this society needs to get out and develop, but our scientists can't touch it because of the prohibitions on it. And our pharmaceuticals would love to probably get their hands on it and be able to pull the best ingredients out for making more pills to pop. But more than likely, we are supposed to be a free society. We don't need our hands held back from things we like to do. We don't need all of our hands held back from smoking a joint, if that happens to be your thing, just because a few criminals want to make it a war to sell the stuff. So to stop the war, they always punish the innocent, and that's my disagreement with it. So raise the lift the prohibition and let it turn back into an agricultural product. Let the Texas Agricultural Commission let them regulate it as all other products in Texas, so it's not overgrown. It's not replacing other products that we need just to grow this, and let the sales begin. Because I was just shocked that he took a Christian approach to it, using the old common law phrases in his article there about the new covenant and all that. This is slowly you're seeing some of the old stuff that came out in the earlier Republic of Texas days, what we were accused of, coming now into the mainstream.
Well, what do you think about should there be age restrictions like we have with tobacco and alcohol?
Well, I disagree with the age restrictions on alcohol and tobacco. I think it's supposed to be a free society. It's supposed to be parents that stop them. No, I don't think the kids should have it. But do you use prohibition as a anti-freedom?
Well, I mean,
a tool to use it?
I mean, what I mean by that is not necessarily throwing the kids in jail or whatever when you catch them with it, but maybe...
That's all they do, though.
Right, I know that. But I'm talking about under a new regime of it not being illegal. But I mean, like, you know, fining merchants who sell it to people underage.
If it's a fine, if it's not a jail sentence attached to, that's probably the way to regulate it.
Right.
It's the only way to probably enforce it.
Well, that's basically what it is.
Age limit.
That's basically what it is with alcohol and tobacco. The only problem is they get pretty onerous with the kids now. They take away their driver's licenses and make them go take courses and sometimes do probation and that kind of thing. But
well, when they make a bar man or, you know, a person running a bar equally liable for a death on the highway that some drunk committed that happened to have had a beer in his establishment, I think it's taking a little bit to the extremes.
Well, and another thing is, you know, that he says where you were talking about the common law part of it, he says our laws should prohibit and penalize violent acts. This is the jurisdiction of the magistrates under the new covenant, harm to one's neighbor. Well, that basically used to be what our covenant was legally. And I think, I don't know if you agree with me on this, I think we need to return to that across the board. If there's no victim, then there should be no crime.
Well, that's an old common law phrase, is no harm, no foul.
Yep.
And it's probably one of the better ones to go by. And it was always, never was left up to judge. It was always left up to the community and the juries. You know, a jury of my peers. If my peers, which would be my friends, my colleagues, my co-workers, my neighbors, if I can prove to them that I'm innocent, or if you can prove to my friends and my neighbors and my co-workers that I'm guilty, then you got a pretty good system going there. Because to prove to my friends and stuff that I am guilty of a crime is more or less going beyond the reasonable doubt.
Well, so,
well, we're up to, like I said, that's this is common law.
Well, how do you think system. This? How do you think this should be applied to other substances like meth and cocaine and LSD and that sort of thing?
Well, you're not talking about an agricultural product there,
right?
So you're talking about something that is purely legislated or granted by grant through corporate law, which it becomes property of the state and regulated by the state.
Well, what I'm saying is, do you think that we should be throwing people in jail for possessing the products but having committed no other crime?
No, I don't think it's back to no harm, no foul.
Right.
Because you can't legislate somebody's life away. That's what they've done to mine. My whole life has been legislated away. You know, you can't even take a dump without having to pay a tax.
Well, and it's not just the taxes. I mean, we have a whole machine pumping people in and out of the penitentiaries and the probation departments and all that stuff every day. And the, you know, back to the no harm, no foul thing, it's been proven time and time again that long-term offenders oftentimes have to be released. And if they're a long-term offender, that means they did something bad with a victim. And long-term offenders have to be released to make room for people that commit crimes that have no victims, like a DWI where no wreck was involved. Or
years ago, I saw a study in Texas that 80% of the people in our prison system have harmed no one.
Yeah.
The danger that they force on society is merely a danger to themselves, not anybody else.
Right.
Well, those people need to be released and let it go home. And hopefully they'll forgive society for treating them like that.
Well, and there's something we were talking about just on an unrelated subject before the show. You said that every law should have a sunset on it. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think in a new system, I'm all for a new constitution and new day in Texas, because it's gotten out of hand. It's gotten absurd. It's gotten ridiculous. But if every law ever written had a sunset clause, a bad law would disappear simply because nobody wanted to vote for it again. Good laws would remain because they would be re-upped. And there's no way, you know, what better system could there be? You know, a law that was good today may not be good from a year from now because that law worked.
Well, and it would certainly be a way to keep these, it would seem like it would help keep these really bad systems that we built up from being so entrenched decade after decade. You know, I mean, there were people at the highest levels of drug enforcement and drug policy as far back as the 70s when Carter got elected, who realized that the war on drugs was already a colossal failure and that it was destroying the open and free nature of our society, and that something else had to be done, but there's just seemingly no overcoming the bureaucracy. I mean, here we are 40 years later, you know, and we it hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse.
They had the sample in front of them. The prohibition on booze back in the early 1900s was this colossal failure for the same reason.
Well, you know, and when they
it
did
made the, people that did it for did it normally every day in their life a criminal. They well, didn't when stop they, them from doing it.
When they did the prohibition on alcohol, they knew that they had to get a constitutional amendment to do that, and they did. Now, when they had the second constitutional amendment to rescind prohibition, it was right around then that they started the heavy-duty drug prohibition, and for some reason, they didn't feel like they needed a constitutional amendment. So I think from that basis alone, the whole drug war is unconstitutional, wouldn't you say?
Well, from that point of view, yes. I think any time you declare a war on a non-state, it's not a war. It's an aggression against innocent folk.
Yeah.
You know, we've gone down to Colombia and created a horrible scene down in Colombia. They finally took them, 20 years or so to clean it up? They didn't clean it up. They just ran it north to Mexico.
Yeah,
the same cartels are still running.
The
same criminals are still doing their thing. And the same people importing it in through Texas and up into the United States are still there doing it. And we call them lawyers and judges.
Bankers
and insurance folk. Texas is a cesspool of some of the worst type of criminals you can imagine. At the same time, they're still Texans, and they could be redeemed, because if they've harmed no one, all they got to do is stop it.
Well, and you know, on crimes where there is no victim, like, say, you know, we're not talking about armed robbery or manslaughter or murder, rape, anything like that, shouldn't there be some type of mechanism where a person realistically has the opportunity after a certain period of time to get their citizenship restored, where they have their rights back, like their rights to serve on a city council, their right to own
firearms? Who gave the
state
the right to take away someone's citizenship?
Well,
it's not in the Constitution, and they don't have authority.
Well,
you should immediately have your citizenship restored upon exit. Your time is served. You fulfilled your debt to society.
Well, I don't know that that's exactly what they call it, but you're definitely disenfranchised. And, you know, you can't serve on a jury for the rest of your life. You can't. Now, the state says that you can own a firearm at your house 5 years after you've completed your sentence, but the federal government says that you can't ever. And if a local, county, or state officer catches you, the odds are about 99% that what they'll do is arrest you and turn you over to the federal prosecutor.
We call those carpetbaggers.
Yeah, right. But and now Texas is just about to enact open carry, where anybody who wants to can carry, except for people who've been convicted of any type of felony, and that includes these rinky-dink little state jail felonies that they send people away to state jails for up to 2 years now. And you know, how is that constitutional or equitable in any way?
I mean, it's somebody trying to please the populace in violation of the Constitution and the liberty where this country is supposed to be built upon.
Right. Well, you know, one big talking point that I hear from the pro-gun people all the time is they'll always have a picture of Hitler, and they'll say Hitler confiscated the guns, and how did that work out? Well, and the truth of the matter is, he was against gun confiscation, except when it came to the Jews. They confiscated the guns from the Jews because he considered them enemies of the state. And, you know, I'd like to throw that talking point right back into their faces, because the select group of people, which, by the way, in Texas, it's millions of people. We run so many people in and out of the prison system every year that are the ones, you know, here in a few months when everybody in the world except people who have been convicted of a felony can walk around with a gun on their hip. Is it just going to be open season on those people?
It's like that comedian from Texas said that his state does have the death penalty. In fact, they do use it so often they put it in the express lane. Not
was
funny,
it?
But that was a joke, and it was funny when he said it. But the fact is, it's gotten horrendous. Number one, the state prisons here are pitiful as far as how is it, treating a human being like a human being.
Oh, yeah.
That you might as well call them concentration camps instead of calling them prisons, because they'll feed you dog food. They really will. I mean, it's mutt chow.
Oh, well, they've been caught feeding them food that killed the hogs. And a court had to order them not to feed them that food anymore, and a couple of officials got fired over it back in the 90s. I can't think of the name of it right now. VitaPro. It was called VitaPro. And the thing was that Texas prison system had thousands and thousands of cows and hogs and chickens, and they made some kind of insider deal to feed the inmates this synthetic substance called VitaPro, and it caused them to break out in lesions and have all kinds of health problems. And this was after they had tried feeding it to the hogs, and it killed the hogs. But they fed it to the inmates anyway.
Texas has not got a good record when it comes to its prisons, that's for sure.
No.
I think that's why Sarah T. Hughes was so, you know, she was wild about cleaning up the Texas prison system. I mean, to the point we all thought she was nuts. But maybe she knew what she was doing.
Well, you know, William Wayne Justice, who's a federal magistrate here in Tyler for decades, a very famous one, probably his most famous case was Ruiz versus Texas Department of Corrections, which is what the prison system was called back then. It's called the Texas Department of Criminal Justice Institutional Division now. But he had to basically take over the prison system, and it lasted for nearly 30 years before he finally handed it back to the state. And it was because the rapes were so horrible, the deaths were so horrible. And one of the things they had going on, they had key tenders. And what it was the guards never did any real interacting with the inmates. They would pick out the most violent, biggest, meanest inmates and make them key tenders, and that meant on their belt they had the key to everything, to everybody's cell, all of it. And if you looked at a guard wrong and he didn't like it or something like that, he'd send four or five of those key tenders. They'd come in the middle of the night while you're asleep in there and just open your cell door up and break in and beat the hell out of you, probably rape you. If you're lucky, they wouldn't beat you to death. And that was the kind of thing that was going on in there. And, you know, and they were having the fight clubs and all that other stuff. And Justice took it over, and he made a lot of real improvements. But he surrendered it back a while back, and I've read that it's really slipped back. For one thing, there's a national program that governors participate in that's to reduce the amount of rapes in their prison. And Perry, for the last couple of years, announced that Texas will no longer be participating in it.
What gets me is, and I see it more with the Republican governor periods than I do, maybe I just hadn't studied them hard enough, but they're all for putting people in prison, and they're all for saying we can't afford these prisoners, we can't afford these prisons. And you can't have it both ways. You set up your prison system for X number, and that's what you have to maintain. But they don't seem to do that. They want to build a prison for 100 people and put 500 in there.
Well, you know, and it's not just the prisons. It starts from the minute you get arrested, because, like, say you get arrested in Tyler and on a Class C misdemeanor, you know, some rinky-dinky little thing that amounts to a ticket, and you're on parole. Well, they take you and they throw you in the county jail, and you can't bond out because parole puts a hold on you. And then Smith County might mess around for a year before they get you to the ticket court. And if the ticket court convicts you, you might get revoked and have to go back to prison for a while. But most likely, whether they convict you or they don't, then a couple of weeks later, parole come along and let you out. And they've had you locked up for over a year on some little old ticket thing like that. And look at the cost involved there, especially if you have somebody that has health problems or something like that, or if something happens to them while they're in there that's, you know, negligence of the facility.
I'd heard one time from a Texas judge, and he was a Democratic judge, because that's who I dealt with, that the judge's hands are tied. For some reason, there was a call come out and a cry from the populace, or at least I think it was more of an election point, was making all the crimes equal punishment for equal for the crime. When before, the judges had their little bit of say-so in evaluating the circumstances behind that crime or what might have caused that crime to vary with the sentences a bit by case, and that option's been taken away from them. They no longer have that choice. So they're not really judges anymore. They're more or less cops sitting behind the bench enforcing the law. They're not really judging any longer.
Well, and we do have, you know, we have our priorities real messed up, too. We our people have this lock them up and throw away the key mentality, and that's a really good policy if you're talking about kidnappers and rapists and arsonists, murderers, that sort of thing. But when it applies to everybody, as I stated before, one of the things that ends up happening is the people who need to be locked away for a long time, they don't get locked away for as long as we'd like, because you always have to have room to be letting the new ones in, because apparently that's what keeps the money machine oiled, is rotating these people around. You bring them into the system, you put them on probation, you violate the probation, you send them off to prison, you get them out on parole, you make them go through all these programs, they get in a little trouble, or they get behind on parole fees or miss an appointment, you violate their parole, they go down to prison, they parole out, the process goes over and over again. And if you're lucky, you get state-enforced rehab involved in there two or three times. And, you know, by the time it's all said and done, the taxpayer's on the hook for hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, for this one inmate in a case that, like we said, 80% of them, there's no victim.
So we need to – maybe this marijuana thing is just the start to heading Texas back down the right direction, because – they've lost what they once had, and that was that "we can do" spirit that was infamous throughout, from the, you know, from the lowest citizen to the highest governor, that we can do it, and we can do it right. And so far, we can don't seem to be able to do it all that well any longer. Nor are we doing it right. We're doing everything wrong. We're following everybody else's lead rather than being the leader.
You know, well, we're
be the leader. We would set the standard, not follow the standards.
We're a cog in the machine now. You know,
a broken cog, evidently.
But we're the one that's working best. You take Texas out of the United States, boy, is the United States in trouble right now.
You're talking about economy. I was talking about prisons and laws. Well, systems.
It's the whole big thing. I mean, yeah. We're a cog in the system. You know, no matter what the system is, so much of this stuff, you know, it's just like a big city. When you go driving through a big city and you cross all these city lines from one little city to the next, you never can really tell where you are without the signs, because, you know, you hit this neighborhood, you're passing by on the freeway, and there's a KFC, and there's an Albertsons, and there's a McDonald's, and there's a Kohl's. And then you hit the next city, and there's a KFC, and there's McDonald's, and there's an Albertsons, and there's a Kohl's. And it's the same thing with all our state prison systems, and you know, it gets to be more and more that way with all of our state and local police. It's if not made uniform from direction top down nationally, some of it even internationally. We even have most of our police nationwide go and get trained in Israel now, you know. So it's all being very homogenized. We don't have what we need, which is what we were designed to be, especially as a republic, but even as a state. In a federal republic under the United States Constitution, the idea under all that stuff is that the locals can design a system that works better for themselves. And we don't have that anymore, really, do we?
No, it's all legislated from the top down. They seem to think at the top they know what's best for us at the bottom, which is a major enslaving tactic used by all governments. I don't care if it's republic, democracy, communism or Marxism or Nazism. Every government has slid into that, thinking that the top down is the way to go to fix all the problems. Well, not all problems can be fixed that way. There are certain problems that are constitutionally approved of as needing the top down system. The rest of it, they're supposed to leave alone. That's why we have states' rights. They're supposed to leave those alone. That's why the people's rights is written into that. We're supposed to leave those alone. Because we, the people in this little town we're in, know what's best for this little people in this town. and we don't get to, you don't get the benefit of determining that because somebody's determined that for you years ago at the top levels. You know, I can remember even when I was a kid, and that back in the 70s in high school, the Arlington police tried every way they could not have to take a young person, a teenager, to the police station. You know, they even do some of the scared straight stuff just to not have to charge them with anything and ruin their lives before they even got started. And it's not that way anymore. Now, all these police around here look for ways to take a kid into jail so he gets another notch on his belt and he didn't have to do anything for it other than harass a kid.
Well, we really have moved to a no-tolerance mentality. You know, that happened around the same time we quit having peace officers and started having law enforcement. And I, if there's one thing that I want the listeners to take away from this, I want you to remember, there are very few bad situations in life that cannot be made exponentially worse by adding a few police officers into the mix. Well, so,
if we start repealing this marijuana law and back this man who's put it into the house, though I don't understand the Christian application on it, but I agree with what he had to say. If we back him, because that might be step one into changing this thing around. This may be the one thing that will change Texas back around the way it's supposed to be. If we can see that we have one representative that will stick to the guns of what the people want, and it's already known that the majority of the people want the war ended on drugs in Texas because it's just a waste of time and a waste of money.
Well, you remember when you and I met at the time he was the candidate to be our state rep, Stuart Spitzer, when we met him over at a local alderman's house, I brought up marijuana legalization. And this was during the campaign when he was running, and he told me he was 100% for it.
Well, I think people have spoken in Texas that they want it freed and put it. And he's just going one step. This guy that wrote the bill, I never even thought about what he's talking about. It is the best approach I've ever heard, is put it back under the agriculture. Make it a farm crop. Well, not make it a wild crop. Make it a farm crop.
Sure.
Make it a commodity that we can count on our goods and services.
Sure. But, you know, another aspect to it is, you know, that I think should appeal to the law and order crowd, and I definitely count myself among them when it comes to real crime, is, you know, we have all these cops around here in Coffee City and Frankston, and I know it's like this everywhere. It's like this in bigger towns. They are running around pulling people over, hoping that they find a joint or a pipe or something in their car, and tying all their time up with that. Well, if you look at the local paper here this week, they're having just a rash of burglaries, thefts, and robberies in the next town over. But you go and look at the police blotter, and what's the big arrest they made this week? Well, they pulled a guy over, and he had some drugs in the car, you know.
Throwdowns.
Well, he probably did have them. I think it sounds like a decent arrest as far as that goes. But why are we allocating all this expensive professional law enforcement sitting on the side of the highway watching and hoping that somebody's had a drink or they've got some drugs in their system when they haven't harmed anybody as far as you know? And yet all these robberies and stuff are just going unsolved.
Because there's nobody patrolling the streets anymore. They're professional ticket riders.
Yep.
They're not law enforcement. They're not peace officers.
Yep.
They're ticket riders.
Yep.
They are revenue enhancers.
They're taught to pull you over, to give you a ticket, and while they're giving you that ticket, they're taught to fish around for probable cause. And one of the ways that they get it is that when they lean down, if they want in your car and you don't let them, when they lean down with their head close to your car, if you have that window down, they will claim they smelled marijuana. And when they say that, they can go in the car. Now, under the video, we'll post a few really important and informative videos about your legal rights during various types of police stops and how you should interact with the law enforcement. But that's what we've got going. We've got a society where the cop wants to know what's in your car. What's in your car? Are there drugs in that car? Is there booze in that car? Is there guns in that car? When what they should be worrying about is people who are out actively doing harm to others. But that would require real police work, wouldn't it?
Like I say, they don't have the mental capacity to do real police work. They're not Sherlock Holmes, who was a fictional character, by the way. They can't do it. They don't know how to do it. We saw that when they had that somebody tried to firebomb a home here. Police came out and walked all over the evidence, picked it up before the fingerprint people had gotten there.
Well, these cops were probably in on it.
But that's the kind of thing. They're ignorant bullies is all they are over here in these Texas, where I'm at.
Truth seekers in freedom-loving Texas. HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
Well, that looks like we have gone way over for our next break, so we're going to take a break now and we'll come back with a short wrap-up.
The liberty of Texas is under assault. The American Constitution has been shredded. The 10th Amendment has been forgotten. The meaning of freedom has been perverted. Washington's values and the values of Texans are opposites. Texans are victims of tyranny not seen since Santa Anna. Obamacare, oppressive taxation, porous borders, more socialism, and firearm restrictions. Sam Houston said, Texas will again lift his head and stand among the nations. It's time for Texas to be free. Texas independence now. The Texas Nationalist Movement.
Truth seekers and freedom-loving Texans. HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
Welcome back to Hidden Mysteries Radio, HiddenMysteriesRadio.com. Okay, for our final segment, we've got another bill that's up before the Texas legislature. This also comes to us from Grits for Breakfast. Rinaldi, stand your ground against unlawful searches, detention. Texas House freshman Matt Rinaldi has filed a bold and inevitably controversial bill, House Bill 1168, which creates a defense to charges of resisting arrest, search, and detention if the underlying search or detention was unlawful. So resisting arrest would become permissible when a cop unlawfully searched or detained a suspect. See the very simple, straightforward bill language. A far narrower version, but similar in concept, backed by the NRA, passed in Indiana in 2012. There are Democrats who want to hold cops accountable by authorizing worthless, redundant civilian review boards to second-guess statutorily hamstrung departmental disciplinary processes. But leave it to a libertarian Republican to suggest that victims of illegal searches and seizures by police should be granted the right of frontline self-defense. Basically, this is a stand-your-ground law aimed at the cops. And say what you will about the suggestion, it would probably be a greater deterrent to false arrests and Fourth Amendment violations than Texas judges appear capable of acting post hoc. Given Rinaldi's lowly freshman status and the fact that he backed the ill-fated coup that wasn't against the speaker on opening day, it's hard to imagine legislation this big overcoming the storm of law enforcement opposition that surely awaits it if the legislature were ever to appear to take it seriously. But his suggestion gets to the core of the debate over police accountability more directly and viscerally than proposals for body cams or civilian review boards. If only because the debate should be immensely entertaining, Grits hopes Rinaldi's bill at least gets a hearing, perhaps considered in the context of a range of other approaches to police accountability. If nothing else, this bill sends a message that Texans are serious about putting an end to unaccountable police misconduct. What do you think, Ghost?
I agree with that. 100%. We need to pass that law. And civilian review boards, they need to have them. They got us, but on a case-by-case basis, that'd be kind of hard to do, especially when those civilian review boards are usually the mayor's best friends and usually the cops' best friends.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what we have here in our little town. That one of the things that when we were working to get rid of the old government, one of the things that got bandied around kind of as campaign promise or whatever was there would be a civilian review board. And when it all got hashed out, there was no civilian review board. There was a police advisory committee. And when I got the minutes from the meetings of the advisory committee through Open Records Act, which I had to go to the attorney general to get forced to have them give them to me. They didn't want to give them to me. There was nothing in there about reining in the cops or having some kind of process for people to make complaints or anything. It was all about, well, we've got to convince the city council to give the police chief this and that, to hire this guy for the police chief and give him this and that, and they've got to do this, and they've got, you know, it was all about, we've got to, the city council's not pro-cop enough, we need to convince them that they need to be more pro-cop. And the thing was filled exclusively with current or retired law enforcement sitting on the board. What do you think of that?
Well, it has some benefits to it, and it has some drawbacks both on it. I think they should have had some non-officer type, non-ever police type citizens on the board with them, because this town can ill afford policemen. They can very ill afford one that does something wrong and it costs the city, you know, in liability of civil rights violations or something. Back to that bill you read, that the more I think about it, the more that is what is needed here, along with curtailing so-called immunity for police for the commit a crime.
Oh, qualified immunity.
Any kind of immunity for it. If they commit a crime, perjury on the stand, anything that can be proven, the law needs to be changed where they must be charged, because they're supposed to enforce the law, not break it. They must be charged with that crime, and it must be taken to court, and there is no immunity for breaking the law. More of these policemen have to face these jails in Texas, a whole lot fewer police are going to be breaking the law out there on the roads.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, he says right here in his last paragraph, the writer for Grits for Breakfast says, if nothing else, this bill sends the message that Texans are serious about putting an end to unaccountable police misconduct. And being able to defend yourself against an unlawful arrest is a pretty Texan way of putting an end to that, isn't it?
That would be the Texas way. We've always done it until Reconstruction.
Well, and it kind of got done after Reconstruction, too. It just wasn't legal. I mean, that's Wes Harden kind of made a career out of shooting.
Yeah, several of them did.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I guess you got any final thoughts on that before we wrap the show up?
No, I think we got a couple legislators from Texas that are finally seeing the light. But that's only two out of how many? Too many.
All right.
We've got to get them empowered. We need to write these guys and let them know that we're 100% behind what they said, what they've proposed. Maybe they can take that and convince a few others if they have 1,000 letters in their hands.
Well, maybe so. And we also have the great technology called faxes and email. And all you have to do is Google the Texas legislature, and you will find a link to their website, which we'll provide under the article with this radio show in it. And you can go find your legislators and email them, and they read the emails. So it's real easy to let your people know. And believe me, the various law enforcement and their unions and all, they're going to really be organizing to have their people write in and oppose this stuff, especially the private prison companies and all that. They do not want to see this. They do not want to see any type of easing of the drug laws, because that's where their bread and butter is. With that, Ghost and I want to thank everybody for coming and listening to us. We hope we didn't bore you too much. We'll be back again next week, if not sooner. Y'all have a good one.
You've known from early on that being a Texan means something special. You probably even learned when you were in school that Texas had the right to make its own choices. Now, the time has come. The time to make a decision for Texas. With an oppressive federal government passing legislation for climate control, health care, bailing out banks and automakers with trillions of your tax dollars, and failing to secure our border with Mexico, it's time for Texans to take a stand. Even Texas Governor Rick Perry had this to say about the current state of affairs.
We think it's time to draw the line in the sand and tell Washington that no longer are we going to accept their oppressive hand in the state of Texas. There is a point in time where you stand up and say, enough is enough.
What do you want for the future of Texas? It's time to make a stand. Enough is enough. TexasNationalist.com.
You're listening to HMR, Hidden Mysteries Radio, HiddenMysteriesRadio.com.